The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to 710 KNUS. George Brockler with you on The George Show. Later this hour, we will be joined by Gino Campana. I just heard Randy's teaser for his show, which I commented to Javi. I'm super impressed at how disciplined and organized Randy is to get that out. I'm not sure I've ever done one, not in 18 months, but it sounds awesome. I feel like I should. But I think part of that would require, like, Randy knows way in advance what he's doing. I don't. I really don't. At this time of the morning, I am so thankful to have just shown up, one, on time, two, wearing pants. I feel like that is setting the bar an appropriate level for Saturday morning. But I'm going to work on that. I'm going to figure out a way to be more like Randy in the organization department, because I think that's pretty cool. But what I heard was he referenced Ron Hanks as someone who has thrown his hat into the ring for the U.S. Senate as well. Looks like we're going to have a pretty vigorous battle here on the Republican side of the fence in terms of the primary. I'll be listening to that. But listen to Gino Campana, too. He's in this race now, and he'll talk to us about what he wants to do. What I want to tell you about, and you know I do this every weekend that I have a column in the Post. Well, I got to write a quick one last week before I took off for Parents Weekend in Washington, D.C., and I did it based on the newly released FBI numbers. And you may not know this, but the numbers are all available online. You don't have to be a member of law enforcement or have some sign-in. You can go find these crime numbers. And for Colorado, they are staggering. And if you feel less safe, if you feel like public safety is really lacking in the metro area, if not the state of Colorado, then these numbers won't come as a surprise to you, other than just how big and historic they are. So I wrote this piece, and again, it's always longer than they put in the Post, but this is what the Post printed, and it would be huge to keep this issue moving forward and to try to get some traction, I think, with policymakers out there. Go out there to the Denver Post, and I know some of you just refuse to do it, but just do it. Go out there, Google Denver Post, Brockler, find my latest piece, and read it, and then send it around. Because the more clicks on it, the more attention it's going to get from the Post editorial board, and the more attention, frankly, that policymakers will make, will give this thing. So here's what it's called. I don't make the titles of these, as you know. That is something that is done by Megan Schrader out there at the Post. But it says, Colorado violent crime is higher than the national average for the first time in decades. Democrats have ushered in this era with offender-friendly laws. That's the title. Here's the body. According to the most recent FBI statistics, Colorado is drowning in crime. But with the current composition of state government, the worst is likely yet to come. None of this happens in a vacuum or by mere chance. There are causes and effects, and while this column cannot explore them all, there is one clear contributor to our current environment of rampant and runaway crime in Colorado. Democrats in charge of the government. Crime should not be a partisan issue, but it has become so. There was a day not that long ago when there was bipartisan support for now maligned ideas like punishment for violent and repeated criminal conduct and preventing crime by incarcerating those who keep committing it. That was when we had divided government in Colorado. Under Democrat control of every branch of state government, laws have been changed and new ones passed that treat criminals like victims and treat victims like they're just unlucky. Bills that were gleefully signed into law by Governor Hickenlooper and Governor Jared Polis. The resulting surge in crime and victimization of Coloradans is undeniable. For instance, juvenile criminals appear to have taken their cue from the increased coddling and yearly watering down of our laws by the Colorado legislature through the, quote, but they're just kids approach to public safety. Since 2014, violent crime committed by those 10 to 19 years old has increased 25% violent crime. In 2016, our legislature passed two controversial laws diminishing the penalties for juvenile murderers and violent criminals, including creating a program for juvenile murderers, regardless of how many people they murder or in what horrible fashion, that would permit them to be paroled after serving as little as 25 years in prison. District attorneys, including me, who publicly opposed these radical bills were decried as heartless and fearmongers. In the 4 years following Hicks signing those bills into law, there have been more homicides committed by 10 to 19-year-olds than in the 11 prior years from 2006 to 2016. In only the first 2 years of Polis leadership, and that includes Weiser as well, Colorado has seen almost exactly the same number of juvenile offenders as seen in the first 6 years of the last Republican in office, Governor Bill Owens. This year, our ACLU-influenced legislature reduced the penalties for felony murder and made violent offenders up to age 21. Those are folks who can vote, serve our country, and purchase handguns and weed, eligible for the same sentencing program that preceded the unforgivable increase in juvenile murderers. The homicide rate is out of control. Halfway through Governor Polis' term in office, the homicide rate per 100,000 Coloradans is nearly 80% higher than it was in 2007, the year Governor Owens left office. All indications are that 2021 homicides will be even higher. But it's not just homicides, but all violent crime that has surged. For the first time in 35 years of available FBI data, Colorado's rate of violent crime, defined as a homicide, murder, non-negligent manslaughter, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, is higher than the U.S. average and by the widest margin since before the 1985 Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl, likely longer. We just don't have data older than that. The reversal in our public safety fortunes since the last Republican governor is striking. In 2007, Colorado's violent crime rate was 75% of the U.S. average. Last year, under Polis and Weiser, it was 106% of the U.S. average. But it's not just violent crime, but property crime, too. For the first time since 1985, the earliest date FBI data is available, Colorado exceeded the U.S. average for all property crimes, including burglary, arson, larceny, and motor vehicle theft. If you love having your car stolen, then Democrat-controlled Colorado is the place to live. And by the way, this part, here we go. Remember when Polis ordered sheriffs to start precluding, quote, low-level offenders, like car thieves, from jail during the pandemic? Colorado car thieves got the message. Last year, Colorado's rate of stolen cars by population was 213% of the U.S. average, more than double, the widest gap going back to 1985, the first year for which data is available. Likewise, reported hate crimes in Colorado have increased dramatically. The first 2 years since Polis and Weiser were elected saw an explosion of 400% in reported hate crimes against blacks and African Americans over the number reported during the first 2 years of the Trump administration. This just scratches the surface. The latest FBI numbers are a cause of great concern for all Coloradans. It's time the Democrats in power put public safety and our innocent loved ones ahead of offenders who continue to victimize us. As Coloradans drown in crime, there is a lifeboat in the distance with two words on its side becoming clearer every day. Election 2022. And that is the column that was in last Sunday's Post. It is online right now. Read it. Criticize it if you want, by the way. Give us a call at 303-696-1971 and let me know your thoughts on that. One of the things that has troubled me, and I guess I'm a part of the media by virtue of having this platform and being able to write a column for the Post and being a sometimes used legal analyst on 9 News, but I am struggling with the fact that in every other area of policy, especially when it tilts left, politicians and elected officials get asked routinely their positions on these things and why they're occurring. And yet I can't think of a single news outlet that has ever confronted the governor or the attorney general with the question, why is crime surging in Colorado? I want to hear their answer. You should want to hear their answers, too. What are they going to blame the surge in crime on? And then I'd ask them, why do you think it's bigger under you than under anyone before you going back almost 4 decades? I want to hear their answer. I mean, if they're being candid with you, they'll tell you it has something to do with what's taken place with our laws, with even though we're no longer defunding the police, we're demoralizing the police. But nobody confronts them. Yet every other person gets asked the silly questions like, do you believe that the election was stolen in 2020? Now, that's an important policy thing, but that's not the kind of thing that's going to result in your car being stolen, your home being burglarized, or your son or your daughter being assaulted or raped. And yet that's what's happening in an increasing number here in Colorado. That's the real kind of policy issue that policy makers and elected officials should have to answer. The stolen election thing, yep, that's worth a conversation. But this much, when you've got people getting killed in epic numbers, historic numbers on Colorado streets. And if you think about these murder numbers, by the way, they are artificially low. That's right. And not because they're going unsolved, for a different reason. Because medicine continues to improve by such leaps and bounds that gunshot wounds and knife wounds that might otherwise have been lethal 15, 20 years ago, that we save them. They live and they become attempt murder charges. And maybe that's what we need to do, is to go back and look at the surge in attempt murder charges to compare it to past years. We look at murder because we feel like that's the Super Bowl of crimes, right? Like that's the single worst outcome that can take place. But medicine is doing such a good job at saving people that these epic historic numbers are artificially low. And maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll get an ER doc on one of these shows. I'm going to get an ER doc on who does trauma unit stuff, hopefully out of Denver, if they'll talk and tell us about that, because that's what's going on our streets. And yet, what do we ask Heidi Ganahl on her governor launch interview by one of the news stations? Why did you delete your tweets from your personal Twitter account? Really? That's it? Nobody confronts the governor on the fact that he deletes every single government email after, what is it, 60 days, 90 days? All of them? As opposed to someone's personal Twitter account? No one asked the governor about that. Nobody asked the AG why he does the same. Nobody confronts them on the idea that we have historic crime surging through Colorado. And that's even based on a percentage of population. And no one asked them, why is this? And what can you do about it? My guess is they don't have an answer for any of it. I heard at one point that the attorney general had said to some group of prosecutors, I'm going to tackle violent crime by getting stolen guns off the street. That's not going to stop violent crime. And by the way, good luck to you. I think it's a noble cause. It's worth pursuing. But come on, man. Maybe what you do is stop showing up at the Capitol and endorsing all of the laws that water down bail, bond, and sentencing. Maybe that's something. Because it's either coincidence or there's cause and effect here, that at a time after the summer of violence in the early 90s, when we started creating mandatory prison sentences, the more repeat and violent criminals we locked up, the more the crime rate dropped. What? Was that just coincidence? I don't know. 303-696-1971, going to the phone lines. Rick from Denver, you are on 710 KNUS. What do you think, sir?
Well, I'm wondering if when the crime statistics are, you know, started in American history that you're referring to, wouldn't it don't they only go back to, say, in the 50s?
Well, the ones online that I found for the FBI, and you can find it online too, it only goes back to 1985. Now, does that mean they didn't have data before then? No, but I imagine over time we change the way we define things and we collect data based on, you know, trends, crimes, differentiation between a, you know, first-degree murder and negligent homicide. So I could only go back to 1985 off of that website.
Well, that's just not very far back at all. But
well, you know, that's pretty far back for people that didn't exist in 1985. I mean, we're talking almost 40 years. That's almost four decades.
Okay, well, yeah. It's just that so many times previous to in this country, before the statistics started, we've had challenging times too. And
agreed.
There's a whole attitudinal difference when it's almost as if the liberals, the establishment, or the peep criminals know that they'll find a way to, you know, to not make them make the penalties forbidding enough.
I think that's part of it. And you're right to point out that I think the 70s, you know, at least in what we're going to call recent history within the last century, that was one of the highest violent crime rates I think America has seen. The 70s was horrible, right?
Right, right.
But you're right to point out that there is something going on here, and I don't know why there are deniers out there when you say, look, when we have mandatory prison for violent repeat criminals, crime rate goes down. When we take those things away, crime goes up, and yet you've got these social scientists out there who say those two things are completely unrelated. It's like, really? How is that possible? I mean, when you send the message that you are a, quote, low-level offender, not worthy of being in jail no matter how many times you commit a crime, You are encouraging that crime. It's like taxes, right? You tax something you want to get less of. You subsidize things you want more of. We are subsidizing crime.
I think the 70s was the start of the disruption of the family and of home life here in this country.
Listen, there's no doubt that it can't just be the criminal justice system that impacts crime. You
well,
are right
it is
to point out.
Because the Democrats, a lot of them, they are home wreckers, really.
Well, but you're right to point out that the other socioeconomic things that are going on are maybe even more impactful. Like in many ways, the criminal justice system is the drain. You know, we catch all the things that are going down the drain and we try to get all the bad guys. But you're right to point out that if there were more intact families, if we had, and I mean both parents in the home, if we had a better educational system, one that we could rely upon to keep these kids educated and motivated, at least up through age 12, I think you would see the crime rate plummet.
I think you would too, because I grew up. Now I'm older, but in the 50s, 60s, I had not only had I'm in a good home, and everybody in my whole town and the county, everything had a good home, and so many other my friends, their parents were almost like secondary parents. They always watched the households and everything. Then in the 70s, everything changed, and it was the 60s that did it.
The 60s was certainly a tumultuous time. The 60s was a tumultuous time for American society. We went through some significant changes that are still with us.
Well, I think it was. I mean, they cast the households out, and there was a transfer of even, like, actually criminals. Well, hey, here's a good case. The guy that murdered part of his kids and beat his wife to death and things, and he's in prison for life, and they had his greater family. I think there was a picture in the Denver Post of them. They're kind of average-looking people, and the prosecutors, they are encouraging the families to communicate, the victim's family and the perpetrator's greater family. And where did you ever see that kind of thing before, after an act like that? And these killers are Caucasian guys with good health and everything. What's wrong with them?
There is something to this restorative justice, and I'm not going to disparage the entire motivation behind it, because I think there is something valuable to this, but it cannot replace legitimate punishment. And I think this is the problem with the super left. The criminals are just misunderstood people. The apologists for them is that the reason we lock people up is several fold. It isn't just one thing. One, and the one that everyone forgets, is punishment. We punish people for doing bad things like rape, robbery, killing, repeated felony conduct. The other thing is to deter others. We're trying to deter others by creating a certain penalty for certain conduct. And what we have just seen over the pandemic and in the years leading up to that is when you take away the certainty of that punishment, the deterrence drops as well. And so people roll the dice and they engage in more criminal conduct. And the final piece is, and I'm not the one rank ordering these things, this is the state legislature that's done this, is rehabilitation potential. But I think many people confuse rehabilitation with, hey, they can be rehabilitated, and that means we can put them back out on the street, even if they're a murderer. No, you can be rehabilitated, find God, do all those great things from the confines of a prison cell because you're still being punished for your evil deeds.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for the important topic. Keep it up. It enforces really well.
I appreciate that,
Rick.
Thank
you, sir.
Thank you. Hey, one other thing to talk about, too, is remember I read that paragraph about the fact that the legislature last year said, let's start treating 21-year-old violent criminals like they're kids for purposes of something called JCAP, which is a sentencing provision that allows these violent criminals, everybody other than first-degree murderers, but I promise you that is on their wish list. They want to take 21-year-old first-degree murderers and make them eligible to be put right back in the mall with us over Christmas. After 20 or 25 years. No, thank you. They can get out of prison when the dead rise, because that seems to me to be fair when it comes to cold-blooded murder. But here's the deal. They being the progressives, the Dems in the legislature, launched a bill that would have expanded that juvenile sentencing provision up through age like 24. Yes, through age 24. So we're in this place where we have a party in power that on the one hand says we should reduce the age for voting to 16 because we need 16-year-olds. We can trust them because it's about their future to weigh in on governor and president and legislature and school board and commissioners. But my God, if they do something horrible like kill people or rape people or rob people, we have to treat them like we can't trust their judgment, like their brains are malformed and their kids. That's the party in power at every level of state government in Colorado. That's what we have right now. And the issue is, what are we going to do about it coming this November and in the following November? We can vote for more of the same, and I think you should expect more of the same. One other quick thing before we cut away for a break here, and then we'll come back for a short period before we bring Gino on. And that is, I asked someone who knows the Capitol super well, and this is like a business lobbyist type person, and I said, hey, do you think that in this next legislative year that we have coming up, that the Dems will tamp it down, that they won't go off the rails as much with their crazy legislation because it's an election year and they don't want to do anything to damage the governor or their reelection chances? And they said, absolutely not, man. The progressive wing of the Democrat Party has a firm hold on the legislature, and they think there's a bunch of things they want to get done. And so they're still going to run crazy bills, and we are going to continue to talk about them here on this show. I'm sure Randy will bring it up too, Steph and Peter. We're going to continue to talk about it here on The George Show. My name's George Brockler. It's 710 KNUS. Vince, Tommy, and the boys, Motley Crue. The initial couple chords, I thought we might be going into Knight Rider, another group, another big hair group. But no, it's the Crue. Still alive. I think those guys are still alive. Older than I am, by the way, which is huge. 710 KNUS, you're back with George Brockler on The George Show. Going to go right to the phone since we're talking big hair and music. Scott from Lakewood, you're on 710 KNUS.
Hey, I heard you mention Guns N' Roses. Have you seen them on tour in the last 4 or 5 years when they're coming around?
I have not, and I always find out after the fact, like something's in the paper, and I'm like, oh my God, those guys are still alive and touring, you know?
Well, I thought this might be a little fun. It was 1988, I was 16 years old.
Wow.
They played Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and the place held like 1,200 people. There was like 800 people there.
Wow.
And a sweet child of mine wasn't cool to like yet. But I'm like right up at the stage, high-fiving Axl and Slash.
Buddy, that is a blast from the past. I mean, if you just do the math on it, it hurts. Because as we're talking about it, you're thinking 33 years ago, right?
I know. Now, I was just doing...
Now, go back to 1988 and do the reverse math.
If but you, I mean, and I really liked them. And when people saw them afterwards, I was like, no. I saw the original guys. I saw Axl swinging the mic stand at the monitor guy. I saw, well, Slash and half a knee break. It was just...
Yeah, but you were Guns N' Roses before Guns N' Roses was cool. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, yeah. And it wasn't cool to like Guns N' Roses yet. And then a couple of years later, my friend saw them. And I'm like, two of the original guys are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember, by the way, that in 1988 specifically, and I was in high school at the time too, when I just started finding out about them, and I'm always late to the music scene. Like, I always listen to things probably 5 to 10 years after everyone else was into it. So right now I'm starting to listen to someone called Britney Spears. No, I'm kidding.
No.
but I remember they were just starting to come out, and they were considered like this harder, kind of real cutting edge, very, very tough kind of rock and roll. And now by comparison, I don't know. I mean, it's still great music, by the way. It's just, I don't know. There's been so many other things out there, but they have, they've stood the test of time. I'd love to see how their tattoos have weathered the storm of the years. But my point was, for us to talk about this music that's 33 years ago, this is why my daughter and her friends think we're ancient, is that if you go back to 1988 and think about 33 years before that, you're talking about bands and performers from 1955. And if you were listening to the radio in 88 and you heard some guys saying, hey, man, I saw this group in 1955, you'd be like, holy Crypt Keeper, right? Like, these guys just pulled themselves out of the grave to have a conversation. And it makes me feel old. It makes me feel old.
Well, and I talk to a lot of guys that are in their mid-20s. I work with them, and I'll start talking about Guns N' Roses, and their eyes will glaze over because I realize when they were happening, these guys weren't even born. And it's like me listening to some old guy talk about Led Zeppelin.
That's like a great point too. They're still going.
Like, I need to hear another 17-minute solo. I don't know.
And then Rolling Stones. They have been touring now since I think the automobile was invented. Oh, it sounds like it's time for you to go to jail. What is that, a call for something?
No, that's just a radio. I started work, but it's an empty building. That wasn't new for me.
Okay, thank goodness. Thank goodness. So other than Guns N' Roses, big high school concerts that you went to that still stick in your mind?
Yeah, Motley Crue. There was a band out of Finland called Hanoi Rocks, and Vince Neil was in a drunk driving accident that killed their drummer in 84.
Holy smokes, what a memory.
By all I say, if it wasn't for those guys, the whole glam thing in L.A. wouldn't have happened. And I've been fortunate enough to get to know a couple of those guys over the years.
Yeah. How?
So once I saw these guys, and when these guys came to town, it was the singer and the bass player from Hanoi, and they played Moe's Barbecue in Inglewood. And I was like, you know you're getting old when your all-time idols are playing a barbecue bowling alley for 12
Wait a minute. I love Moe's in Inglewood. The owners of that are fantastic human beings. That's a great place. Who played there?
Well, it was the singer and the bass player from this band, Hanoi Rocks, from Finland.
Man, that's impressive.
And they had come over to they had like four albums in Finland. They put out their American album. They came over for a tour. The singer broke his ankle in Boston, so they took some time off. They went right to L.A., partied with Motley Crue, and their drummer ended up getting killed. So Hanoi Rocks never got a chance to get big in the United States, but everybody that was in L.A. at the time had tickets for this show that never happened.
Man, you have a tremendous memory of the glam rock scene. That's incredible.
Well, I did 12, 15 years in the music industry.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's how you got to know them. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Hey, Scott, thanks for the phone call, man. That's a great trip down memory lane.
Have a good day, sir.
You too. Hey, that was Scott from Lakewood. That's my hometown of Lakewood. Just so you are tracking, if you haven't listened to the show before, Belmar Elementary, Carmody Junior High School, at least it was 7th and 8th back then. It might be a middle school now. And then wonderful Bear Creek Go Bears Senior High School just down the road at about Hamden and New Kipling. It's in a new building now. We were in a different building across the parking lot, one that apparently was condemned probably while I was in it. Listen, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Gino Campana, candidate for the United States Senate. Sounds like that field is getting crowded. We're going to ask him some great questions, get to know him a little bit more. I'm sure we'll have him on again in the show in the future. Until that time, George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Big Hair Bumper Music Saturday here on 710 KNUS. George Brockler with you on The George Show, going right to our VIP line. As many of you know, there is a big election coming up next November. That's November 2022. And one of the biggest offices, maybe the biggest in the state of Colorado, outside of President of the United States, in 2024. But 2022 will be a U.S. Senate seat. And that is currently held by Michael Bennett. He's been in there since 2009. If you're doing your math, that's at least 12 years now that he has been in office. There are a number of people who would like to replace him as United States Senator. On the phone, pleased as punch to have him, a guy that I've known for years now from up in the northern part of the state, successful businessman, Trump appointee. We can even talk about that if you want to, but Gino Campana. Gino, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, George. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Great
of course.
Music, too, by the way.
Yeah, so every week so far, Javi at the end of the show is like, well, what kind of music do you want? And so I picked disco one Saturday, and this Saturday was the big hair bands of the 80s, and, man, the guy has really hit it out of the park on this. Gina, let me ask you, introduce yourself to the listeners, for those folks down here in the metro area who may not have heard of you yet. Tell us about you.
Well, it's pretty simple, George. And first of all, thanks for having me on your show.
Of course.
When you're talking about the music from the 80s, as if it's so far back in 88, heck, that's the year I graduated from high school.
Ditto.
It doesn't seem like it's that far back.
Ditto, brother, 88.
Going into this campaign, I was going through old photos. You know, these guys want photos to put on the website and videos and things of that nature. And that was my wife's comment. She said, oh, my God, look how big my hair was back then.
Did you please post that on your website? Because I need to see that.
Well, you know, Michelle and I actually met on a blind date in high school, and we've been together ever since.
Oh, congrats, man.
Four children. We just celebrated our 28th wedding anniversary.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was the best blind date a guy could ask for. I can only wish that upon all my children.
Yeah, good for you, buddy. That's great.
George, as you know, I'm not a politician.
Nope.
I'm a business guy and an entrepreneur. That's what I know. But I'm running for the U.S. Senate to fight for American dream and stop Michael Bennett and Joe Biden from destroying our country. George, this is personal to me. I don't know if you know this about me, if you saw my announcement video, but it was only through extreme compassion, meeting with extreme poverty, that I'm even here today continuing to live the American dream. You see, George, during World War II, an American soldier who had occupied the village my father lived in and saw my father struggling to even find food. It was a destroyed country, as you know. It was shelled. And,
well, by the way, and Gino, based on your name, I'm going to presume you're talking about Germany.
Oh, Italy.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. Of course it's Italy.
Yeah,
of course it's Italy.
This is Naples, Italy.
Been there.
And you've been there.
Oh, been there.
Best food. Yeah.
Pizza. Isn't that the birthplace of pizza?
Birthplace of pizza.
Boom.
A pizza margherita.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Great stuff.
Well, this soldier, George, he inspired, my father would tell him about the endless opportunities of America and the greatness of America. And my father, as a seven-year-old, would tells me that he would just sit there and think about what he would be able to do if he was able to come to this country. Well, the Americans left, fast forward, the Americans leave. 7 years later, the same American sponsors my father legally and his sister to come to Fort Collins, Colorado, which was his hometown. I call that the journey to the American dream. My father then was able to live out the American dream. You know, right now we're hearing a lot of talk about cradle to grave welfare, cradle to grave dependency. My father looked at America as cradle to grave opportunities.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
He wasn't coming here for anything other than the opportunities that didn't exist in Italy at the time. And I learned that from him. I got to watch him build his company from scratch, George. And, you know, we have four siblings, and we lived a great life. It was hard. My father believed in if you can get up and go to work, go to work. And I remember he was a stonemason, George, and one of the worst jobs to do as a bricklayer and stonemason is washing the brick. You have to use muriatic acid and water after it's laid. The next day you go and you wash it, right? And I swear my father would pick the coldest Saturday mornings to send me out on the job site to go do that. And then when I complained, he'd say, well, you should stay in school. You should remember what this is like.
That's a great point.
And I think it worked because I got a degree in environmental engineering, and I started living my own American dream, George. And now I have an obligation.
Gino, are you saying that your dad did not inculcate in you the idea that the government owed you a child tax credit or some other extended benefits for just simply drawing breath?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He believed in coming here and give. Here's his thought. Give me an opportunity, and I'll work, and I'll achieve what I'm trying to achieve. You know, but right now, my obligation is this, George. I look at my own children. Now I have four children. My oldest daughter is getting married in 2 weeks.
Oh, congratulations.
On a campaign while, and I say the number one priority in my life is still my daughter's wedding, right? So
yeah,
we got
that right.
Two
Smart.
More weeks going. Thank you.
Smart.
Very exciting and does make you feel even older.
Yeah, that's right.
And we will be bringing some of that 80s music to the wedding.
And the campaign. I don't know what the father-daughter dance is, but maybe something Madonna? No, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there,
God,
as a suggestion.
No. George, you have a daughter, right?
I do, in college right now. And if I say the word, yes, she's going to get married in 2 weeks, but I'm going to wing myself off the top of this building. There's just no chance I could deal with that right now.
Well, I learned one thing. I am a crybaby when it comes to this, because
yeah,
I spent quite a bit of time with my wife working on that father-daughter dance song and selecting it. And it's going to be special, but I don't think – every time I even think about it, I get choked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I know.
But back to fighting for the American dream here.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe Biden and Michael Bennett's policies are taking this notion of an American dream and turning it into a socialist nightmare. And for the first time, George, you and I are looking out at the next generation, our children, and we're thinking, are they going to do as well as we did? Are they going to struggle more than we did? And all of us as parents want our kids to do better than we did. And for the first time, I think, our generation is saying, no, I'm not sure that's going to happen. And my thoughts on this, George, is this. People like Michael Bennett don't understand the American dream.
Yeah.
They don't understand providing opportunities. They believe that the government dependency is okay. And it should be just part of your life from the time you're born, your cradle, to the time you die.
I'm going to take it one more step, Gino. I don't think it's just that it's okay. It's that it's encouraged. And what you've seen now that's different than any other time, I think, in our history, is that there is now a move by the lefties in the United States Senate and Congress to try to get the middle class to buy off on these benefits because they know it will guarantee that they live on forever and that they build those votes out of suburbia. Because once you get someone addicted to something like these child tax credits for everybody, regardless of their income level, and that's what the progressives want, all of a sudden now they become invested in keeping them. And now you can grow it. You can never diminish it. You can never take it away. So I agree with you. I just think it's worse than that. It's not just that it's okay. It's encouraged.
Well, I agree 100%. And it undermines the American dream. People should be encouraged to go out and go to work. They shouldn't be encouraged to figure out, you know, what's the path to dependency. I can't tell you how many times, George, we own several companies. I can't tell you how many times I hear from somebody, I can't take on another shift because if I do, I won't receive this, right? Instead of encourage people to take on another shift, they're encouraged to stay home because they will lose some of these benefits. We got to put it in it. We got to be smarter about how we do this. Look, we just came out of a horrible situation with this pandemic. People struggled. I can't tell you how many roundtable discussions I had, discussions with the Office of Management and Budgeting on how to roll out the stimulus plan, particularly with regards to restaurants and people in the food and beverage industry, because I'm involved in that. Two roundtable discussions with business people thinking, I have my entire life savings in this business. What's happening with this pandemic? Okay, but now we've survived it. We're coming out of it. And we need to work our way out of it and stop talking about stimulus dollars going back into our market. There is nothing is for nothing. No, the notion that this $3.5 trillion plan will cost us zero, who do they think they're talking to?
There's a huge need for the Republicans to take back the Senate and this seat. And if you need any other evidence of that, it's look, with no mandate from the voters at all and with a 50-50 split in the Senate, we are looking at the prospect of a somewhere between a $2 and $3.5 trillion give money back to America kind of bill that's going to pass. There's talk about blowing up the filibuster so that they can pass things on a 50 plus vice president vote. I mean, it's scary times when you look at who's pulling the strings back there. Let me ask you this, and I know you're running against Bennett, so I'm going to ask you about him. By the way, nice guy. I've always gotten along with him. He's a family man. I don't dislike him as a person. I just dislike him as a U.S. senator, you know, and what he's done. Guy's been in office now, what, 12, 13 years. Taxpayers have paid him over that period of time about $2.5 million in salary. Can you name for me his big legislative achievement?
Well, I can't. I don't think
nobody
he can either.
Can. And, nobody and me, can.
I'll boil it down to this. I have, in my business and over my time, I've received job performance evaluations, and I've given job performance evaluations. When you're an elected official, your job performance evaluation is in the form of an election. That's how we deliver our evaluation to our candidates. And I will say, Michael Bennett has always been very cordial to me, very, very nice. He's a nice guy.
He is. He really
but there's
is.
A couple of things I'm looking for in a senator. One, I want him to be a nice guy. I want to like the guy. I want to believe he's capable of doing the job. I want to believe there's an alignment in values. And you know what? I like to believe he inspires me a little bit, inspires my children a little bit. But guess what? After 12 years, the data is there. Now you're measured against data. When you're first elected, the people that are going to elect me to be their senator in Colorado are going to elect me based off of my campaign. But he doesn't have that luxury. Now he's measured against what he's done. And my response and my evaluation is this. Great guy. Wrong. You know, I'm in the wrong seat on the bus, though. We have to make an adjustment. In any business, we would make an adjustment here, George. We'd go, this guy's not capable of doing this job. Let's look at his job performance. He hasn't done – the only thing he's done is supported other Democrats in the Senate. He's a proxy for other states.
By the way, to the exclusion of Colorado, Gino, and I know you're tracking this too, but there are two big things that were destined for Colorado, one that was here, and they're both leaving because Hickenlooper and Bennett will not flex the muscle they have. One is called BLM, right? We had the Bureau of Land Management out here. All Bennett had to do was to send a little note over to Chuck Schumer that says, "Dear Chuck, you cannot count on my vote for infrastructure or your $3.5 trillion bill unless you keep BLM in Colorado." And he could have done the same thing for Space Command. Instead, they just kind of, as you pointed out, they just go with the flow of whatever the leadership says. Not what's best for Colorado, what's best for them and their party.
Again, go back to capability. You've been there 12 years. You're one of the senior level senators. Why don't you have any pull? Either you have no pull, no one's giving you any respect, or you have no capability in negotiating. I want my senator to get out there and fight for me and negotiate on behalf of Colorado and Colorado values and fight for the American dream. That's what I'll do. I put it all over my campaign. I'm going to fight for the American dream. Let's look at
Gino. 1 sec, because we're running out of time. I want to ask you two big questions. They're the tough ones you're going to be asked everywhere you go. All right. One is, do you root for CSU over CU? Because that could be a vote killer.
This is a major problem in my house, George. My wife and I are both Rammies.
Oh, my goodness, Gino.
Okay. But now I have my third child going to CU.
Okay, so the
so
next
now
generation.
Now I have a CU buff dad hat, right? And I wear my CSU shirt. I wish CSU performed a little bit better. But I support both teams.
See you as well. Look, you always want your kids to do better than you did, and it sounds like you're doing that. The other one, and this one's not as fun, but you are going to be asked, if you haven't been asked, by the Denver Metro media for sure, if not up north there, when someone, and we just saw this with Heidi Ganahl, who's running for governor. First question out of the media's mouth is, tell me about the 2020 election. Was it stolen?
And my answer is simple. The election was full of problems. We all know that. And we need to fix those problems. And H.R. 1 is not the way to fix it. And I'll tell you what, if we don't get back a seat in Senate, if we don't get to at least a 51-49, crazy legislation like H.R. 1 is going to get passed by these people.
Yeah, H.R. 1 is not good for
And what's going to happen in H.R. 1? Now that they're going to tax us, George, take our tax dollars and give it to a candidate who wants to run for office, so they can take that money and create an attack ad and use that attack ad against the candidate that we like. That makes no sense. They're going to establish election rules federally for every state.
Yeah, no, you're right,
Gino.
That's
contrary to the American.
And I want to have you back on so we can talk more about some of these issues. You're right. There's no need for us to federalize local elections. They should be kept at our level, not at the Pelosi D.C. level. But I got to let you go because we're at the top of the hour and cut you. But this went so quickly. Man, you were talking great here for about 17 minutes. It went so quickly. I'll have you back on as the campaign progresses. You just let me know what your schedule is like.
I appreciate it, George. I'll do it anytime.
All right, amigo. Talk to you soon. Good luck. Gino Campana, candidate for United States Senate against Michael Bennett, announced this past week. When we come back, Michael Fields from Colorado Rising Action. Until that time, George Brockler, The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.